I'm Jeff Timmer. I've advised Republican candidates at the local, state, and national level as a consultant and as executive director of the Michigan GOP. Now I'm a political nomad who's put what's best for the country above carrying water for my former political party.
And I'm Mark Brewer. For 18 years, I battled Jeff and his Republican allies as chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. These days, I'm a lawyer and consultant to progressive nonprofits, political parties, candidates, and ballot question committees.
This is a republic if you can keep it. Inside the backrooms of Michigan politics with veteran political strategists Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer.
Welcome to a republic if you can keep it. Joining our conversation this week, the former two-term governor of Ohio and 2016 presidential candidate, John Kasich. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I'd classify Governor Kasich as a worthy opponent on policy, but also as someone who brings honor to the term public servant. Jeff, you know the governor very well from your work in his 2016 presidential campaign.
An interesting man, and he'll have a unique perspective he'll share with us today. After narrowly ousting an incumbent Democrat Ohio governor in 2010, he was reelected by a massive 2-1 margin in 2014. It was a different GOP then, as that landslide came after Governor Kasich supported Medicaid expansion allowed under Obamacare, much to the distress of some state and national Republicans. Kasich had previously served for 18 years in Congress, where he chaired the House Budget Committee, and when Bill Clinton was president, actually presided over a balanced federal budget. That sounds almost impossible today.
In 2016, Governor Kasich voted for John McCain for president as a write-in. In 2020, he broke with fellow Republicans to endorse the election of Joe Biden.
Yeah. Welcome, Governor Kasich. Well, the most obvious thing that comes to mind is, you know, given where the politics are today, do you still think of yourself as a Republican or see room for people like you in today's Republican Party?
Well, yeah, I'm a Republican. I'm conservative. I kind of view government as a last resort, not as a first resort, but it's necessary at times. And yeah, I'm certainly a Republican. And when I look at the Democrats and I look at the amount of money they're now spending, it reminds me why I'm a Republican. So I'm comfortable where I am. And, you know, I wish the party would change and become more of a party of ideas. But, you know, I'm a Republican. I promote ideas all the time. And so we'll see how this thing shakes out over the next few years.
And when you look at, you know, where the party has moved since in just a few years since you were running for president and, you know, had been reelected overwhelmingly in Ohio in 2014, you have with an open U.S. Senate seat there, you know, is there a path for a candidate like you in a state like Ohio?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, running for office is about how you feel, how strong you are, how you present yourself. And I don't ever put restrictions on who can win any office. I mean, I've won elections that people said I could never win, but that was on the basis of some feelings, that strong feelings that I had, my ability to articulate them and convince people I was the right person. So I don't get all worked up or hung up when people say, well, you know, you have to have this lane or that lane. I just don't think about politics in that way.
Governor, you endorsed now President Biden last fall. Can you give us your take on his first couple of months in office, good and bad?
I'm glad that I endorsed him because I didn't want to have four more years of Donald Trump, plain and simple. And, you know, I think he's brought about a much better tone in this country. And so I think the tone of, you know, it's not every day you wake up with another crazy headline and another series of divisions and all that. That's on the real positive side. On the negative side, I just don't think there's been the outreach on bipartisanship that they say they're all about. And I think they're spending too much money. So we're just going to see where this all heads.
Would you differentiate, Governor, between the American Rescue Plan and the infrastructure proposal? Or do you think both of them are spending too much money?
Well, I think that with the first program, the $1.9 trillion, my sense was they could have come down to, you know, maybe 1-1, 1-2. I'm just throwing a number out there, and the Republicans could have come up to that. I think that the Democrats were not particularly interested in the Republican views on that, and I think the Republicans were not particularly interested in reaching a higher number than their original plan. So it fell short. The infrastructure has a long way to go. And I think one of the keys is going to be, and because it's going to a long way to go, there's no sort of Damocles hanging over everything that this has to be done in this period of time. So it's going to give the public and the people who follow this a much longer time to sort of think about it and analyze it. And, my sense is this package is not going to pass anywhere near the way that it looks. And I think there's going to be a pretty strong case made that if you're going to do infrastructure, it ought to be infrastructure as we think about it, highways and roads and dams and things like that. When you add everything else in, and look, I mean, if you take a look at the whole package, and I've not studied it in detail, but if you were to take a look at it, there's many things in there that are desirable. But Mark, it's the same way. There's a lot of things you would like. You'd like to take your family on better vacations. You'd probably like to knock out the wall and build a bigger house. You'd like to get a brand new car. Yeah, we all want that. But it's a question of how do we pay for it? And we have not repealed the laws of gravity. So at some point, because of this rising debt, and Republicans contributed to it mightily for a number of years, that rising debt means that either our children are going to have to pay higher taxes or we're going to have slower economic growth. So typical of us today, we're having a great party that our kids are going to have to pay for. And that's what concerns me.
You're one of the rare Republicans today that can say that with credibility. Not only did you live up to that belief when you were in Congress and then, governor of Ohio, you didn't then, Trump was in office, like the Republicans did, especially those first 2 years with complete control, forget that lower spending orthodoxy that has led Republicans to a governing majority over the last several decades. And so now when suddenly they find, their spending voices again, it's with less credibility. And you've never sacrificed that.
Well, the Republican Party or any political party is my vehicle and not my master. And so, I kind of call them the way I see them. I'm a Republican, so there's some loyalty to that. But it's not an overriding loyalty that it forces me to abandon the things that I think are important for the state, the community, the country. I mean, it's just, I just don't see things in those kind of those partisan terms. But, we have a bigger issue in this country than just this partisanship and the Republican Party and all that. We have seen a culture over the last 40 or 50 years that's shifted away from a we culture where we're all in this together to an I culture. And if you look across the horizon, and this is something I've talked about for 20 or 25 years, and Robert Putnam is writing about in his latest book, this is something that's affected all of us, whether it's business and the fact that some of these CEOs get these payments when they haven't done a very good job, or whether it's a business putting money ahead of all other principles and profits without any social responsibility, or in sports where you see some of these coaches that have preyed upon young athletes, or performance-enhancing drugs, or religion where people have decided that because they wear a collar, they ought to have a political position somehow, or in the media where it's all about eyeballs. I mean, we've gone from a we culture here, and we've drifted into an I culture. So everything's about me and what's good for me and what's good for my immediacy. And that's a really troubling situation. That's why we see politics not working very well, because people are all interested in what's good for me.
Governor, do you think there are some concrete steps that we could take to address that problem? And I agree with you. That is a serious problem. I'd focus more on what I'd call selfishness, frankly, and this lack of sense of community and obligation to each other. We've seen that in the pandemic, for example. But are there some concrete steps that you think we should take to try to deal with?
Well, Mark, it's a good question. This is not something that has just started. This is something that's been happening for a long time. And all the resurgence in America that went from the Gilded Age, again, according to Putnam, which I buy, into an age where we went from I to we, now we're back to I again, What's essential in all this is a moral foundation. It's a moral foundation that convinces people that it's not just about my soul. It's not just about me, but it's about the world around me. And the minute we begin to reestablish a moral foundation, and part of the problem we have is the moral foundation that's supposed to be leading this are our religious types, our religious leaders. But when we look around, a lot of them have discredited themselves in a variety of ways. So if you talk to young people today, or a lot of people today, when you mention religion, they kind of look the other way. But to me, religion is simple: love God and love your neighbor. And that's profoundly a profound direction that you got to kind of sift down into to figure out what all that means. What does it mean to love my neighbor? What does it mean to love God? But establishing a moral purpose is the first thing. And the second thing is, this morning I was looking at a biography of a CEO, and I noticed that he's at the Boys and Girls Club. He's an advisor to the Boy Scouts of America. These kinds of associations and groups, which used to be a critical part of our country, need to be reestablished again, because they get reestablished for a purpose, and they have a moral underpinning. And then that moral underpinning fuels them with a desire to bring about the changes that we want. No significant great social change ever came from the top down. It always comes from the bottom up, Mark. So as we begin to establish these groups and reject the notion that if I don't hit a home run, I might as well not get on base with a single, and have a moral underpinning over time, I have no doubt this can be fixed. But it's a long road back, because it's been a long road down.
That's a very interesting take on this. And some of the things that we've talked about, Mark and I together and with other guests on this podcast, is, we'd love to get to a point where we're arguing with each other again about what marginal tax rate should be. But we've got these bigger issues, not just with our politics, but with the politics and society and culture being so interwoven, and what people watch and where people shop is now dictated by which party they're supporting. And it is going to be a long road, and it's going to take people who have a greater sense of purpose. And it was good to see a coalition like that form in 2020, a coalition that extended from Bernie Sanders in AOC to John Kasich. Is a pretty big coalition on the political spectrum, and it represents a great swath across America. So I remain optimistic. I just worry that people don't have the patience for the time it's going to take.
Well, the other way to look at it is everybody is empowered. Everybody matters. Everybody counts. So you guys do this podcast, and hopefully people listen to it, or you go about your daily life and you see something in the community that that bothers you or whatever. If we could convince people that getting together in groups to support a common cause where we live and where we work is really matters. And to give you a good example, as I like to say, or somebody once said, if the Secretary of State or your trash man went on vacation, who would you miss more? So all things are local. And all things emanate from the bottom up, and people's ability to assert justice and righteousness. So, Mark, it's about speaking out. You remember that situation where they were yanking that guy off the airplane and everybody went crazy. They were treating him like some kind of a rag doll, and everybody was up in arms about it. Well, why didn't somebody speak out? Where was the person at the counter? Where were the passengers? I mean, it's about all of us asserting ourselves at times when we may have to get out of our comfort zone. But that's okay. But that gives us an opportunity, all of us, to be more powerful. And we tend to think, well, we don't really matter. It's the big cheeses. It's the elites that matter. No, frankly, we matter. And the more that we can convince people that, where they can begin to take action. And just, I'll give you one a good example of it. Look at Greta Thunberg, this young school girl who, just demanded the world pay attention to the environment. I mean, she was just standing outside the legislature, I guess, in Sweden, and it became a global movement. So things come from the bottom up. And we admire a lot of the bottom up. You look at the people that are in Hong Kong right now trying to preserve their freedom. There's lots of examples of people who do remarkable things. Think about the people in Michigan right now who are the COVID nurses and what they're doing to carve out a better, a better life for somebody else. Pretty amazing, pretty impressive. They just need to tell their story.
Governor, you made a great point about the need for a moral foundation. I think in the profession that the three of us are in, a little bit more focused, we seem to have a real erosion of the belief in the fundamentals of democracy, like honoring election results. And one of the projects that Jeff and I are trying to engage in through this podcast and otherwise is to, have this basic sense of democracy. I mean, the three of us can and do disagree pretty vehemently on policy. But I think we all agree that we honor elections, right? And we move on and we compromise and we work together and then another election comes along.
Right.
So part of the fraying that we're seeing in this country and on a state-by-state basis as well is this whole devotion and belief that in democracy, that we're going to honor election results and not question them and not try to overturn them by mob rule or whatever means we see. Any thoughts on how we deal with that problem or your thoughts on that problem generally?
Well, I know that there, I just read today, I guess, a chunk of Republicans think the election was stolen. And, I just don't buy it. So voices like ours have to speak out. And I don't like the fact that some of these states are moving to making it more difficult for people to vote. I don't agree with that. I think voting ought to be easy, but I also think, it needs to be secure. So, I think there's reasonable things that we can do. In my state, the state of Ohio, we've had early voting, mail-in voting. We've had curbside voting. We got drop boxes. I mean, we've had all those things. And if everybody did what we were doing here, it would and we don't have any problem with fraud or anything like that. So that's a good standard. Make it easy for people to vote, protect the sanctity of the election, and accept the results and move on. I'm glad to see that in the NCAA tournament that Baylor ended up winning, and I didn't notice that Gonzaga's running around saying, no, it was stolen from us.
Those guys in Ann Arbor, though, they're claiming it was stolen from them. But that's what those Wolverines are like.
Well, and, they're always, I'm not going to go there. Michigan treated me very kindly, but, I did go to Ohio State, and I understand I'm excited that Michigan's is going to start playing football again here in the next couple years.
Mark mentioned some of the things that we can all agree on. I think one other thing the three of us could agree on is how much Mark sounds like Sherrod Brown when he talks. That's something somebody else has pointed out in the past.
One of my heroes from Ohio, Senator Brown.
There you go.
Well, I think it's time to take a little commercial break here, if you don't mind, Governor, and we'll continue the conversation after a short break.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Jeff and Mark return after a brief message.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with decades of experience measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, federal, state, and local issues. Our clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, state agencies, and local governments across the state. When it comes to measuring voter opinions, Epic MRA has been known as the go-to Michigan pollster for over 25 years. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
The Michigan Polycast. It's been called one of Michigan's top political podcasts by Hourly Detroit.
Each week, longtime political junkies Christine Barry and Walt Sorg offer news and views on Michigan politics and policy, as well as national issues impacting our pleasant peninsulas. And they are joined by some of the state's biggest names from government, politics, academia, and nonprofit groups, with an in-depth look at those issues.
Subscribe now to the Michigan Polycast, online at www.michiganpolycast.com.
We're talking today with former Ohio Governor John Kasich. And we are talking about the state of affairs, not just in the Republican Party, but in our body politic and our culture here in America that is without question, there's a divide and things are frayed. And we can, by having conversations like this, hopefully, work together for the small d democracy, even if we have partisan differences.
I'm tired of the term, partisan differences, and we, you know, look, we're all in this thing together. We're all in a, we're all in a boat, and you know, our goal should be, what is it that's going to help the most amount of people to be more successful? So I think it's also good to be able to go back and take a look at some of the principles that have guided you to see if they need to be updated or rejected, and if there's something else that matters. And you know, to me, it's just all pretty simple. And look for the truth, look for the facts. Sometimes that's difficult to do, but to find all the facts. But, you know, you can get to them if you're interested in them. But what we want people to do is to just treat one another with some respect and realize that a lot of these highbrow things we're debating really don't matter as much as what happens right there on the block where you live, what happens in the school where your kids go, what happens at the university, what happens, you know, in any of the social gatherings. That's what we need to focus on. And I don't think you go to too many parties where they're having a big debate about marginal tax rates, except everybody's in agreement that we're all glad that the government is not as effective at spending everything that they currently have. I think we all kind of
certainly don't go to parties like that twice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
Governor, I can't resist. You know, you've had long tenure in public service, the Congress, the State House, and other offices. And recently, your fellow Ohioan, John Boehner, has been, you know, reflecting on his life in public service. And I was wondering if you'd be willing to offer us some reflections. I don't know if you've had a chance to read what Mr. Boehner has written and what he's talking about in terms of his public life, whether you feel comfortable offering us any reflections on his career.
No.
Okay.
I mean, what do I think of John? I think John's a good guy. He got a lot off his chest when he's written his book. It's not the kind of book I would write, but, you know, he's a unique person. He tells it the way he thinks it is. And, but, you know, look, I've written a couple books since, you know, in the Trump years. And what they really want you to do is they really want you to attack people. That's what people want. And I'm not too much into that. I don't see that that helps anything for me. You know, that's me. And I knew that because I wrote a book, It's Up to Us, 10 Little Ways in Which We Can All Help Our Country, whatever. I knew people wouldn't go crazy for it. I thought it was a good book. I think it's more important today than it was when it was written, which was not that long ago, when I wrote Two Paths. You know, they wanted to know, oh, well, are you going to tell some nasty stories about Trump? No. Why do I want to do that? You know, why am I interested in trying to throw mud on somebody else? Because you know what? I don't want them throwing mud on me. And I'm not comfortable being able to do that. But I'm sure I have not seen anything really about John's book. I'm sure, you know, he'll be out there. I don't know. Is it out? I don't even know if it's out yet.
I think excerpts have been released. Yeah. And, you know, one thing that does seem to bring a lot of Americans together is a disdain for Ted Cruz that he displays in his book. That's what's gotten all the sensation. So, you know, I wanted to go back to something when we mentioned, you know, the not throwing the mud that you just mentioned. You know, the simple act that back in 2016, when the Republican convention that nominated Trump was, you know, hosted right there in Cleveland, and in you resisted the temptation to, you know, get on the cable news and whatnot and blister Trump when you pointedly weren't endorsing him. And that set a good tone for exactly what you're talking about. The simple fact that you didn't endorse him sent a louder message than if you had gone on cable news and taken to the circuit to say bad things about him.
I made my case against him, but it's not, you know, name calling or anything. I mean, I'm not like a shrinking violet, as I think you guys both know. You can't be in politics as long as I was and be as successful as I was by just being, you know, some sort of mush. I'm not mush. But when it goes to trying to make personal attacks against somebody to demean them or to hurt them or to cancel them, that's just not where I want to live, because life is short. I'm not in public life right now. I mean, I'm still a public figure, but I don't hold public office. And when I look back, I'm proud of what I've done. It was basically issues based. And designed to give people a chance. If I was remembered for the fact that, you know, he said these nasty things. Now, one of the problems will be some people remember me for going to the Democrat convention. I mean, that's such a minor part of what I've done in my lifetime. What I'd rather them focus on is how was he in Ohio and how did he do the things he did to make sure that 600,000 people had health care? What did he do in Ohio so that people felt as though they were all being listened to and being considered? That's the kind of stuff that I would prefer to be remembered for than whether I went to some convention or not.
Yeah, and I just used the going to the convention or not going to the convention, as it were, in 2016 as an example that spoke to larger issues of character to me. And you know, you and I spent a fair amount of time together back in 2015 and 16, and it didn't surprise me. I don't think it was a hard decision for you. I don't think it was one that you wrestled with then. But looking at what were there nearly two dozen other Republicans who had run for the nomination who, they immediately after saying, having critiques and very strong disagreements, pivoted to, because it was good for their, their political careers. And right. So that simple matter of character spoke to the larger good that you have, I think, sought to accomplish in public life.
Well, maybe, Jeff, you can say that. When it gets into defining one's own character, I think it's probably better for somebody else to do it rather than yourself to be start talking about what great character.
I'm saying that
a couple of days before you drive your car up on the sidewalk somewhere. We all are deeply flawed individuals. Everybody I've ever met has flaws, some more than others, but. I did what I needed to do. I wasn't going to go somewhere where I didn't think it was appropriate, and let that speak for itself. I think we do better when we are good examples by actions rather than by words.
Following up on that vein, Governor, can you give us some examples of people you think in public life currently are good role models, the kind of person that you'd feel comfortable supporting or even voting for? From both parties, perhaps?
Well, look, I don't want to get into specific names about this person or that person. What I try to do when I vote is I try to figure out, is this person a uniter or are they a divider? And if they're going to be a divider, they're not going to get my vote, regardless of what party they're in. And there are a lot of, there's people out there I admire. I like Christy Todd Whitman, a former governor of New Jersey. I like Susan Molinari. I like her a lot. I like Charlie Dent from Pennsylvania, Tom Davis, but I'm not in Congress anymore to sit around and study who these folks are. It's like trying to watch a movie star and trying to figure out what they must be like. I prefer to know them before I can say, what I really think about them, because I don't really know them. But there were a lot of people I work with, Christopher Shays, a terrific guy. And I was just on a Zoom call with a bunch of 30 Democrats from the class of 1974. A lot of them are people I like, Richard Gephardt, Tom Downey, Marty Russo. These are all people that were my friends and still are my friends. And so that was the good thing about Congress, is that I was able to have people on both sides of the aisle. And, here in Ohio, there's a lady running for Congress right now, Nina Turner, who I spoke very favorably about, because of the work she did with me on community and police and guns. I like her a lot. So these are people that I work with, and those are the ones that I can speak most clearly about.
In some of the work I was doing last year with the national coalition that we had put together called Republicans and Independents for Biden, worked very closely with Christy Whitman and folks like Mickey Edwards and Steve Bartlett, yeah. And people like that, who I know you served with. And in these are people who come from a starting point that I wish more people in public life would come from. And I know we're near the end of your time here, and so thank you very much.
How's your podcast going? Is anybody listening to it, or is it just your own family, your relative?
Well, it's going to be our family and yours. No, we're it's
I don't think my family will be listening. So
count us out. I can't get my family to listen, quite honestly. Okay, no, but we're doing pretty good. All things considering,
I'm about to start a podcast, by the way.
Yeah,
and it's going to be very unique. I'm doing it with a comedian. His name is Jordan Klepper, and Jordan is a protege of Jon Stewart. And we're excited to get started on that. It'll start in about a month. And it's not going to be political. I mean, we may discuss politics, but it's basically going to be a podcast about what makes people tick and interesting subjects in a whole variety of areas.
I like that. It's kind of along the vein of what Obama and Springsteen are doing together.
We'll be much better than there will be.
Clearly, so. we're aimed at more of a political insider audience. That's who our audience are. And we are now in the top 5% of nationwide podcasts. But consider that, that's still a 5% number.
Really good for you guys. And excited for you. And keep it going. Hopefully, I'll see you sometime in person. You know, we're getting through COVID now. And of course, you're having a tough time in Michigan right now. We're aware of it. And wish people would just go and get vaccinated as quickly as they possibly can.
Right. We know a lot of Ohioans have second homes up here in Michigan. You're always welcome to get tourists up here.
Yeah. I have one final question. Right, what are you listening to nowadays? What's on your playlist? I know back in 2016, it was 21 Pilots on a heavy rotation.
Well, they weren't on a heavy rotation, but they did listen to them. But I mean, right now, the song I like that I've been listening to is by the Foo Fighters, called Waiting on a War. So check it out.
Thanks for that. And thanks so much.
All right, guys. Thank you. See ya.
Thanks, Governor.
Jeff, thanks for everything. And Mark, good luck to you guys.
Thank you very much. Good luck to you.
All right. We'll see ya. Thanks.
That's our time for this week. Our great thanks to Governor John Kasich for his thoughts on keeping the Republic. And we're looking forward to listening to his new podcast.
If you'd like to talk back at us, send us an email. arepublicpodcast@gmail.com. If you like what you hear, share us on your social media and take a moment to give us a grade on Apple Podcasts, and please subscribe.
And if the Republic is still standing in a week, Jeff and I will be back. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, or go to our website, www.arepublicpodcast.com. A Republic, If You Can Keep It, with Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer, is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.